Wouldn't it be great if we could know exactly what the future held, right? It would have been nice if we could have known in 2019 that there was a global pandemic on the way. But it's impossible, right, to know the future in that way. However, it is possible to anticipate the future. It's possible to look at current trends and see where they are taking us. Tom Zine has been doing this future forecasting for many decades and has helped lots of churches think about what is happening in their communities and how they can make plans as they anticipate what's coming in the next several years. Now, Tom also thinks a lot about the younger generations and how their presence and their activity will shape our society in the coming years and decades. I'm talking about Gen Y and Gen Z. And what I love about Tom's knowledge of these younger generations is that it's based not only on research, but on relationships. And he's going to share a little bit about that near the end of our conversation. Now, before we jump into the episode, I do want to let you know about a webinar that Tom Zine will be doing together with Todd Bolsinger, the executive director here at the Church Leadership Institute. The title of the webinar is Leadership and the Challenges Facing Your Neighbors Today and Tomorrow, Your Community's Pain, Your Calling. The webinar will be on May 10th, 2023 from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Again, May 10th, 2023 from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And we don't have registration set up quite yet, but we will give you more information about that as we get closer to that date. So keep listening. We will give you all that information. Sign up for the Church Leadership newsletter as well. I'll tell you how to do that in the outro. But for now, I'm so glad to bring you this conversation with Tom Zine. I'm Marcus Watson, and this is episode 155 of Spiritual Life and Leadership. Hey everyone, I'm here with Tom Zine. Tom's most recent book, co-authored with Dwight Friesen, is 2020's Foresight, Three Vital Practices for Thriving in a Decade of Accelerating Change. And for 28 years, Tom taught at Fuller Seminary Seattle Extension, a course titled Christian Worldview in Rapidly Changing Times. Hi, Tom, how are you doing?
Marcus, it's a delight to be back with you again.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're here. Tom, I've had you on the podcast one other time. It was episode 118. The title of that episode was Forecasting and Innovation, a little bit over a year ago. But remind us just sort of what you do.
Yes, I had a second conversion experience on the first Earth Day over 50 years ago. Hmm. I was working at a community college in Hawaii. And Dr. Dater came from the University of Hawaii and shared some of the environmental challenges that we were going to face. And as a young 30-something back then, I prided myself on keeping up on current events, but had no idea the world was changing. Mm. Well, the student response was immediate after he was done. They took some bags and headed down the street. They wound up at a motel right on the ocean. I had no idea what it was about, but I was tagging along. Hmm. When we got there, I saw what it was about. The week's garbage was out on the beach for the ocean to take away. The students did a day-long sit-in, and believe it or not, the guy caved, signed up for a garbage service, and I moved to Seattle to pursue a doctorate in intellectual history and a minor in forecasting.
Hmm. Wow. And you've been doing that for quite a while now.
Ever since, because I love working with pastors, but unfortunately, very few pastors are trained to either forecast the challenges facing them, those folks in their congregations or their neighbors, nor are they trained to research innovative ways like pandemic times to respond to new challenges. So I've been doing creativity workshops for over three decades, trying to help pastors learn to not only anticipate some of the bumps in the road, but become much more aggressive in researching innovative ways to respond.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Now, usually I ask my guests just one little get to know you question. I didn't warn you about this, but I remember you saying in the last time we spoke that you have a connection to Frank Herbert, the author of Dune. Maybe just tell us briefly about that, because I think it's just so fascinating.
When I moved to Seattle on that first Earth Day, my first course at the university was Utopia Dystopia, taught by Frank Herbert. That was my first doctoral program.
Wow.
And Frank also got involved with me and a group of professors at the U, meeting with the governor of the state, Dan Evans, Republican governor.
Yeah.
Washington State, California, Maine, and Hawaii all created futures projects. It became a statewide futures project, and of the six states that did futures forecasting, the state of Washington was the only one that took immediate initiatives.
Wow.
Even as a Republican governor, he met with people all over the state to get their concerns, particularly about the environment, and their ideas. At the end of the year, he took their best ideas and actually created legislation to bring environmental changes to the state of Washington that reflected what the citizens asked for.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. And that was Frank Herbert.
And Frank Herbert was a part of that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's so cool. Well, I'm excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today. In our last conversation, a little over a year ago, we talked about your book, 2020's Foresight. And today we're going to kind of take a little different approach. And you wrote a book back in 2016 titled Live Like You Give a Damn, subtitled Join the Changemaking Changemaking Celebration. Yeah, that's right. And you talk about generations Y and Z, and you refer to them as good news generations. Talk to us about that. What does that mean, and why is that important?
Here's a quick copy of the book, and what it's about is that every church I've worked with for 30 years, Marcus, love their young people, love them. They're glad for those that still have young people because, as you know, Pew Research has accurately forecast for over a decade that young people are not going to be affiliating with churches, even those raised in churches, like we've seen in the past. Yep. But I not only do pastors and lay leaders fail to do that kind of research as to why that's happening, they don't realize the profiles of each new generation. They love to have them around, but they don't know that Gen Y and Z are a whole new cup of tea because they are the first digital generations. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they're much more aware of economic, environmental, racial justice, and they do give a damn. They want to use their lives for serious, serious change making. Yeah. And that's just not something that pastors or lay leaders have tuned into. And so they're missing an opportunity. And in the book, I talk about an unusual church in the Midwest that was a mainline church that sold property for about, $2 million. And they decided to use a chunk of that money every year for 10 years to run a competition for Gen Y and Gen Z people who had any ideas as to how to improve the neighborhood. They did not require them to go to the church or join the church. But those that won every year got $10,000-$20,000. And the business people in the church became the launch group to help these people launch their new social inventions. The first year, a young woman who was a graduate school won the contest with mobile market, because she discovered that many of the poorest people in this city lived in areas where there were absolutely no grocery stores at all. A lot of them didn't have ways to get to grocery stores. Mm-hmm. She used the money she and her team gathered to buy 4 school buses, transform them into traveling grocery stores with reasonably priced food, and then set up an itinerary to go to the neighbors in need on a regular basis, which was remarkable. Yeah. The last, you know, they did this 10 years, and the last couple that won had already moved into the Somali refugee community, 90,000 Somali refugees. And the real challenge there were a lot of the moms didn't speak English. They hadn't had job training. With kids at home, they couldn't get job training, and they came up with a solution. They found a church with an industrial kitchen, and they set it up for these moms to make a product called a pastinia and carry it in the grocery stores with vegetables and other things, a very attractive item. Paying these moms a really good living wage for something they grew up knowing how to make. And so I think we need to discover in our churches how to work with young people that aren't church people yet, but they are people that really do give a damn, and they would like to use, many of them would like to use their lives starting all kinds of community implementation projects.
That's great. I guess, so maybe one of my questions would be, why do you think, maybe there's two parts. Why do you think, this is pre-solution, this is problem part. Why do you think Generations Y and Generation Z are dropping off from the church, from, I don't know if it's from Christianity or just from the way that we're doing church, and why are churches having a hard time maybe even realizing that or responding effectively to that? What's happening there, do you think?
Well, Marcus, right now the churches are aware of all kinds of people dropping off during the pandemic. So one of the crises the church is facing that they didn't anticipate is declining numbers and declining giving. It's less clear why the young people, I think perhaps because they're much more tuned in to the world around them, their focus is wanting to really focus on the change that's needed, racial, environmental. Just had young evangelicals for climate action here yesterday, and the young people are much more aware. And so I think they're just more focused on where they want to spend their time. And it's an active change making, not just going to a product, you know, going to a service once a week.
And I've seen some research on declining trust in institutions generally. Well. And the church is an institution, at least it's certainly perceived that way. And it is, I mean, okay, well, and then I guess more positively, why do you think the younger generations, Generation Y and Generation Z, are so concerned about matters of environmental matters and justice matters and social matters, those kinds of things? And then how can the church, you've given us some great examples, but maybe more generally then, how can we respond? How can we, what do we need to learn? What do we need to embrace in order to respond well to where their energy is?
I would encourage churches to consider, as the church I described, ways to find areas of need in your neighborhood. It may be starting a community garden. The church has the property. And I'm sure there are young people in your neighborhood from different cultural backgrounds, Black, Latino, Caucasian, who would welcome the opportunity to help put together a community garden. Now, there are others that are more oriented to business orientation, and they would like to use their gifts to help start a training program. Hmm. Near Calvin College, there's a black church that did something quite unusual. And this is before the pandemic. It's probably 8 years ago. Hmm. They designed two training programs at their church because they're in a black community and a lot of unemployment. And so two programs training young people, one to start the coffee shops when those were just getting started, and the other to train people in house construction, which pays a really good wage. Mm-hmm. And for young people that haven't had any education beyond high school, it's providing a really good income. Mm. And I think churches need to think beyond token charity, which just doesn't make much of a difference, frankly, to these kinds of community engagement and transformation. Because of the pandemic, there are a lot of people suffering and getting hammered, and the churches are struggling so much to run their budgets and reach out to their own people. Yep. They aren't thinking as much about the neighbors, but I would encourage all churches to find out what the most immediate needs are in your own community, and then find young people that really would welcome the opportunity to be involved in addressing that issue.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of the challenge of, you know, needing to focus on what's urgent and then to the exclusion of what's important.
Let me tell you about a church I just worked with, a Presbyterian church in a small town near the coast here in Washington State. They had everybody read the book, 220's Foresight, Three Vital Practices for Thriving in a Decade of Accelerating Change. Mm-hmm. And then day two, after discussing the book, we did a creativity workshop. Now, they knew that they were a graying and declining church, but they didn't know. They hadn't noticed they had no young families anymore. So one of the creative ideas that came out of that workshop, they had a building that was underutilized. And so they came up with the idea of running an arts program for elementary school students when they get out of school, so parents aren't having to pay for extra babysitters.
Yeah.
And it's a way to connect with young families. Yeah. They also looked at the price of housing in this community. And even though it's small town Washington, $600,000 is the starter house, which isn't attractive to young families. So they did something I've never heard of a church leaders doing before. They actually got together with city leaders and started trying to persuade them to change the housing policy to build greater density and use more housing on less land to reduce the price, so that they won't just wind up becoming an old people's community.
Right, right. That's great.
They came up with other ideas too. Mm-hmm. And but people in churches are not invited, as business leaders are, business innovators, to either anticipate the new bumps in the road, the new opportunities, or to broadly research innovative ways to respond. Yeah. So I enjoy doing futures creativity workshops with young generation people and with congregations.
Yeah. So let's talk about anticipating, like, because that's kind of where your area of expertise really is. And how do we, not just that, but but that is your area of expertise. How do we do that? How can churches really begin to anticipate? Because it's so easy to get stuck in where we are and what's happening right now and just getting to next week or next month. You know, how do we think about what's really coming down the road?
Certainly. Good question. This place that I encourage churches to start are with lay leaders who work in the business field. Many of them are trained to do forecasting and to work with those men and women to anticipate how your neighborhood is going to change in the next 3 to 5 years. and get some responsible estimates of where there will be challenges and opportunities. And then once you have that information, do something that pastors aren't trained to do, forecasting in seminaries. They're not trained to do research on innovative responses either. So then get together with your business folks again and encourage them to start researching innovative ways that other churches or other communities, organizations are reaching out to address those needs and create your own way to join that parade, join that party, and move beyond token charity to real serious neighborhood empowerment. A number of churches have started community gardens that have land available, and that's always a quick place to begin, where you can invite particular groups in the neighborhood that are on the short end of the, you know, receiving of resources, to check out, set up plots for themselves as a gift from the church, and as an expression of serious compassion. And I just encourage people then, once they've done the anticipating and identified some innovative ways to respond, to select those responses that really reflect the ways of Jesus, that really are empowering and uplifting for people that won't have an opportunity otherwise.
I think it's so important, the distinction you make between token charity and really a kind of partnership with our neighbors.
That's right.
And because I think, so my opinion, I think God works to bring God's healing and wholeness through all kinds of people, not just church people. And so how do we participate and invite people to, because people want to bring good into the world. I think they do. Whether they're followers of Jesus or not, because I think we've been wired in that way by God to want to bring shalom into the world, right?
That's the right word to use. And I think simply taking time to get to know the young people, Gen Y and particularly Gen Z right now in your neighborhood, and hear what they care about. Invite their ideas without inviting them to join the church first. And then help them implement the ideas that are within reach and that have the possibility of making a real difference in the lives of people where you live.
One of the things I remember back when I read your book, 2020's Foresight, you know, when we think about the future, I think one of the first things that just sort of automatically comes to mind is technology. And we think of, oh, what do we need to know about technology in the future? Will we have flying cars? You know, I'm joking. But you know, it's not just anticipating the future isn't just about anticipating what kind of technology there will be. There are other things that we need to anticipate. For instance, I remember you mentioning housing as a challenge. What are some of the challenges that we, just broadly speaking, maybe not specifically for our neighborhoods, but more broadly, what are some of the challenges that you see that we need to be anticipating?
You mentioned a huge one for Gen Y and Gen Z. They've all been scripted, whether they were raised in churches or not, if they were raised in the middle class, to expect to get a house 20% nicer than mom and dad's with closets as big as small bedrooms. And that bird's not going to fly any longer, and nobody's telling them that. We love our young people, but we haven't given them the bad news that they, most of them, are not going to be able to buy houses nicer than the ones they were raised in. In fact, we need to find new ways to reduce housing costs for them so they can use that time to be involved in local neighborhood change making, more time with their kids. And so one of the things that's happening is that a lot of Christians, Mennonites particularly, are settling for less expensive, less spacious houses so they have time and resources to use in neighborhood change making. There are churches that are building less expensive housing. The Mennonites have a project now building housing all over the country. But it's unusual because many of us middle-class Christians are raised with high consumer expectations, and our lives are directed too often more by our consumer aspirations than our compassionate concerns. And so part of what we need to do is get churches to help remind us that we're here for our neighbors, not just to get more comfortable and have nicer holidays. And so I'm drawn to the Mennonite Church because they talk more about a serious whole life faith in which they reduce expenses. And I might just mention Christine and I, Christine has a great blog site that on spiritual prayer and spirituality, godspacelight.com. But we created a co-living house. It's actually, it was built in 1910, which is really old for Seattle. And it's essentially three two-bedroom units stacked on top of each other. And we rent out the other two units to younger people at a reduced rate if they have a meal with us once a week. And if they garden with us once a month, last year, 100 pounds of tomatoes also, that we shared with them. They gardened with us, and 400 pounds of apples. And so we have delighted in being involved in the life and learning from Gen Y and Gen Z. They're teaching us stuff all the time. And they welcome the reduced rent for the opportunity in an expensive place like Seattle to also, you know, explore faith perspective. These are all Christian young folks that we invite.
That's great. You know what I love about that is, so now I realize, Tom, when he talks about the younger generations, it's not because he's done a lot of reading, research, or studies, but he actually has them living in his house in one way. For 30 years. Wow. And that's amazing. That's how you anticipate the future, right? Is by being...
Well, they do educate us because the couple downstairs and the couples coming upstairs are all people that don't need an office to work in. They can work any place in the country. And so the downstairs people come from East Coast, and the people that are coming in April are coming from the Midwest. And we're having a good time.
That's great. And that's the kind of work that really churches need to do, is be in relationship with their neighbors, all their neighbors, but including the younger generations.
Go ahead. Well, and that's why I still enjoy working with churches, doing creativity workshops. And I do a lot of research ahead of time to find out some of the challenges that they may not be aware of and the opportunities. And then the creativity time goes you know, swimmingly, because they're ready to go to work on these kinds of things, but they've never been invited to imagine new possibilities like the church I described.
So for our last few minutes, let's talk about your futures creativity workshops. I think that's what they're called, right? And just to mention that you're going to be doing one in conjunction with the Church Leadership Institute in the Bay Area. Sometime in the next couple of months. We don't have a specific date, so more info to come on that.
In May, I'm told.
So in a webinar in May, I believe, right? May 10th. And we'll send out more info about that. So, but folks can be on the lookout for that. But tell us about what you do in your Futures Creativity workshops.
Well, first of all, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, so it'll be like coming home to be there. Looking forward to it. Well, the first thing I do in Futures Creativity workshops, once I know what church has invited me, is that I start researching, and I encourage them to as well. But I will spend several weeks researching the kind of issues that they're facing, talking to not only the clergy but lay people, but also talking to people in the community where they're located. to find out the other, not just congregations, but projects that are bringing real community change. And in the last place I worked, I discovered there was a farmer that actually was helping young people build tiny houses and then actually helping them connect them up to water and power wherever they relocated them as a part of what he did on his farm, which I thought was a great idea. So this is the kind of things that you discover, not only the needs, but the opportunities. And then I put together a process. The church I worked with read the book first, 220's Foresight. It kind of got them ready. And day two was where we had six small groups, each working on different issues and coming up with different ideas. And they have implemented several of those ideas, and they're still looking at some of the others. So it's not that complicated, and I'm not that expensive these days. I'm looking for a way to be involved with people who really want to be much more part of the change making that's possible.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm looking forward to learning. I won't be at the Future Creativities Workshop in the Bay Area, but I am looking forward to continuing to learn from the work that you're doing. And maybe as just in closing, what encouragement might you give to pastors who are in a position of uncertainty and some frustration? What was that?
And some are, frankly, in crisis. Because there are churches I've found recently that don't have enough people attending the church and giving to the church to sustain their payments on their property. And so some of them are looking at the possibility of having to sell the property. So it's it's a crisis time. This pandemic hit people hard. And just to be honest, I didn't see it coming either. You know, the last pandemic in Seattle was back in 1910. And so it was a surprise for all of us. But we've got to find ways to move forward, and part of that requires research not only on the problems, but much more research on innovative responses. So I would like to help people discover those, not just for their neighbors, but for their young people. Help their young people find other places to go to college that aren't as expensive, other alternatives to housing, so they have their lives free, not only for the kids that they'll raise, but for the neighbors that they'd like to impact as well.
That's great. That's great. Well, we will keep everyone posted about the Futures Creativity Workshop coming up and the webinar that's coming up. Is there anywhere else that folks can go to find out more about the work that you're doing or stay up to date?
TWSign@gmail.com. TWSign@gmail.com will get us there. And the website for my wife's excellent website on prayer and spirituality, it's a global site. She gets 2,000 to 3,000 hits some weeks. Godspace Light, LIGHT.com.
Okay, great. Well, Tom, thank you so much for this conversation and for kind of helping us think about how to look ahead and create what you called some, I think, some lead time for our churches to prepare, prepare ourselves for what is to come. That requires some work.
And find some new possibilities, just like our business innovators do.
So thank you, and thank you for all the good work that you're doing. I appreciate it, Tom.
Marcus, it's always great to be with you.
Well, I really love talking with Tom, not only because of his expertise and his passion for thinking about the future, but also because he really lives it out. And if you want to hear more from Tom and from Dwight Friesen, Tom's co-author on 2020's Foresight, I want to invite you to listen to episode 118 of Spiritual Life and Leadership. The title of that episode is Forecasting and Innovation. Also, don't forget that Todd Bolsinger will be doing a webinar together with Tom on May 10th, 2023, from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. The webinar is titled Leadership and the Challenges Facing Our Neighbors Today and Tomorrow, Your Community's Pain, Your Calling. And we will be taking registrations for that soon, so keep listening for that information. We'll be sure to announce it here on the podcast. And another way to stay informed is to subscribe to the Church Leadership Institute's newsletter, which you can do by going to depree.org/church. That's depree.org/church, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. And then finally, if you find this podcast valuable, we'd be so grateful if you would share it with someone you know. And we would also be really grateful if you would rate and review the podcast. That just makes the podcast more findable for others. Well, thanks so much for being here, and I will see you next time here on Spiritual Life and Leadership.